Why It Ended is brought to you by you. That's right. Why It Ended has fought against the odds in the crowded world of wrestling podcasts and become one of the top three or four wrestling interview podcasts in the entire world. And we are doing more downloads than ever. Last week was our biggest week ever, and this week's going to be bigger than that. And you can advertise to all the wrestling fans that listen to Why It Ended, whether you have a wrestling-related product or you have a product that you would advertise to the coveted 25 through 44 male demographic. We got them, and they will hear all about your product on Why It Ended. Just email us at whyitendedmail@gmail.com. That's whyitendedmail@gmail.com. Why keep your product a secret? Tell it to all the wrestling fans you can on Why It Ended.
Ho, ho, ho. I'm just kidding. I'm not Santa Claus. It would be more bro for me. But nonetheless, guys, I hope you've enjoyed your Christmas. We're here. It's hashtag Wide Ended Wednesdays. It's the holiday. Christmas is done. New Year's is upon us. This is the last Why It Ended of 2018. We're fresh off David Arquette last week. And Matt, what a year it's been.
Man, let me tell you, I got the best Christmas present ever.
Oh, God, what?
Some motherfucking downloads on Why It Ended. Thanks to David Arquette and
you
Tommy
just got
Dreamer.
Gangster.
And the last few guests we've had, we are on a roll. The most downloads we've ever had. We keep going up and up. Thank you to all you listeners, and the Patreon's exploding. Thank you guys for everything. We are bringing this year to a close strong. But let's talk about David Arquette. That was a great interview.
Yeah, man, I could talk to that guy for hours. You know, he's weird, but I kind of dig it. And it was cool listening to his story. And I think the wrestling world is starting to get on his side.
So it was awesome to me because when he started talking, he started doing that little giggly voice he does. And
yeah.
I've heard him on Howard Stern like 100 times, and he does that little giggly voice. And I just kind of marked out for a second, said, oh, my God, it is David Arquette, you know. And, you know, and the other thing is nobody I know is a wrestling fan, so he's the first guy I can brag about I interviewed.
Well, yeah, no, that is pretty cool. I don't get excited for things anymore, but wrestling him, interviewing him, I guess kind of like he said, he doesn't get excited to meet actors because he grew up with them. You know, I don't get that excited to talk to wrestlers because I'm around them all the time. But him, it was a little different because I watched him when I was younger in movies and stuff. So, yeah, it was exciting to talk to him. I feel like, you know, we upped our game a little bit, Matt. We got a big star on.
And I think so. And Tommy Dreamer was great. David Arquette was great. Tony Schiavone was great. We were on a roll. And you know, you say it's hard to get excited about meeting new wrestlers, but I think you're going to get excited about our wrestler we have today for the last Why It Ended with Robbie E. ever? I don't know, but the last one for this year for sure. Who do we have this week, Robbie?
We have a guy that I was a huge fan of in middle school-ish time frame for me, and his name is Ahmed Johnson, and he is a perfect person for Why It Ended because he is the guy that, you know, for the most part, vanished. He disappeared. You don't see him at conventions, really. No one really knows his story of how he exited the wrestling world. So today, I think a lot of people are going to be tuning in to hear what the guy who was the master of the Pearl River Plunge, what his story is all about.
You know, I am looking so forward to this because he was one of these guys pre-Attitude Era who was going to be a big star. And speaking of big stars, Robbie, next week, maybe we'll talk about at the end of the show, we have maybe the biggest star we've ever had. The interview I'm looking forward to the most. I am going to put this guy under the crosshairs like nobody's seen since the Vince Russo interview. I'm excited about it. But until then, we're going to have another Patreon member, I think, introduce us to Ahmed. What do you think?
Yep, I think that is a great idea. Let's take it to him now.
This is Patreon member Henry from Virginia, and I want to ask why it ended.
All right, guys, we are honored to be joined with someone who's always been on my short list to be on this show, someone you all remember from Attitude Era, pre-Attitude Era, the master of the Pearl River Plunge, Ahmed Johnson.
We appreciate you being on. We think you're a perfect guest for our show. And, you know, to get right into it, let me ask you, like, what was it growing up like for Ahmed Johnson? Where were you originally raised?
I was born in Kokomo, Indiana. And I was raised in Florida, and it was a very rough, rough, rough upbringing.
And when you were young, were you a fan of professional wrestling?
I watched a little bit. No, I wasn't a diehard fan until I got older, but I watched a little bit.
Obviously, your background is in athletics, and probably you came to wrestling through athletics. So the tough background you had, were athletics kind of a good escape for you to kind of?
Yeah, I did every sport. I did everything I could to stay busy and not to go home. You know, this situation at home was, you know, so unbearable. But I did a lot of, I did track, weightlifting, wrestling, basketball, and football in high school.
Of course, for you, football kind of became your thing because, you know, you're big as hell and you're athletic as hell. You went on to play football at University of Tennessee. You must have been a standout in high school.
High school, I was a big-time standout. I was the maniac in high school as far as football field goes.
Did you have any interest at all in professional wrestling at that point, or was that on your radar at all?
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't.
So how did you end up getting connected to, you know, follow a path to be a professional wrestler?
I had a partner that was training with Ivan Putski. I don't know if you guys remember Ivan Putski.
Yeah.
I had a partner that was training with him, and he invited me. He kept bugging me about coming training with him and how good of an athlete I would be in the wrestling ring. And I was like, it's like 2 years I blew him off. And then finally I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I went down there, man, and started doing it and liked it.
What was, who were some of the other guys? Like, was it a wrestling school or was it like more of like a private thing?
No, it was a wrestling school. It was me, Stevie Ray, Booker T. That's about it for the school. Then I got hooked up with Global, with, you know, me, Brashaw, a bunch of people.
Well, when you first did the training, was it easier than you thought it would be? Harder, like running the ropes, taking the bumps? Like, was it something that
harder,
easy to?
A lot harder.
So you found a new respect for wrestling at that point?
Oh, yes. That was harder than football.
That was, you hear that?
It was. It was harder than a Dallas Cowboys football trial. I mean, it was harder. At first, I was like, man, this is just too much. I mean, hitting the ropes, and then after that, I thought we were just about done, and we were just worn out.
Hey, so let's not bypass this too quickly. You were at the very early stages of Booker T and Stevie Ray. You saw them, too. They're training, too. You know, a lot of us think of Booker T as this, you know, the standout of Harlem Heat, of course. Of course, Stevie's the older brother. Did you see Booker as this special talent, or were you guys pretty much all on the same page back then?
He was good. Even then, practice, he was good. He was standout even back then in school.
Would you have thought at the time then, when you guys were all training together, like, wow, we're all going to go on to be, you know, TV stars? You know, did it seem that easy that you guys were all going to make it to television wrestling at the time?
No, you know what? I at the time, I was just doing it just to stay in shape because it was harder than my workouts. So I was just doing it just to stay in shape. I didn't think that none of us was going to make it.
How long were you training before you actually had, like, your first match?
Oh, I would say I was training for, like, 2 months. Because I was, me and Booker, was, you know, the standouts in the class. And it took us about 2 months, and he threw us in the ring in a little bitty house show at a skating ring, I believe it was.
Were you shitting your pants your first time going out there in front of a live audience?
Oh, man, I was just so scared. I was going to forget everything in front of the people. Then they're yelling at you. You know, I was the heel. And so they're yelling at you, cussing you out, and I'm not used to people cussing me out. After the first match, you kind of get in the groove of it.
Was there a racial component to the heel thing or the heat that you would get back then in that area? Or was it just pretty much standard heat that you would normally get?
Well, you know, people are going to throw the N-word around regardless. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if they wanted to come up ring and knock the shot of them or what, but, you know, they're just the race, it was no more than it was in the WWF or anywhere else.
When you were in Global, what was that experience like? Global, of course, had some TV, and it had, you were bringing in some people. They were trying to do some things. Did it seem like Global was going to go somewhere, or were you? Did you already have your sights on, you know, Titan up in Connecticut?
I thought Global was going to go somewhere. I really did. It was Global was. I mean, as far as fun go, man, it was the best as far as fun goes. As far as having a memorable time, I mean, can't beat Global. It was a lot of fun.
How was, did everyone get along in the locker room, or when you were new, did anybody give you a hard time because you're this young guy that's in shape, that's, you know, doing good? Did anyone, did you get along with everyone right away?
Yeah, I got along with everybody. I didn't have heat with anybody in the locker room. The only thing I can remember is Johnny Valentine's dad. I forgot, what's his name? Greg Valentine's dad.
Johnny.
His name was Johnny, right?
Yes.
Well, I remember he was old, probably in his 70s or 80s, and that's when he had his leg amputated. And he watched my matches all the time and, you know, give me the big man moves. And I remember one time I came back there, and I guess I didn't do something right. He sat me between his legs. He says, come here, son. And he sat me between his legs. He said, I told you, when you come across somebody's chest, you open hand, and he hit me so hard, I swear my heart stopped for a minute. That's how hard that old man hit me, and my heart stopped for 1 second. He said, okay, that's how you come across somebody's chest. I was like, oh, my God, come on, I've got to kill him. Well, I was trained by a bunch of hardcore old-timers.
Yeah, Global had a mix of up-and-comers, and it had a mix of old-timers as well. Was that an example of kind of, you know, maybe two different kind of worlds going on there at Global at the same time?
Exactly. Exactly. And I came up with a bunch of old-timers, listening to them, you know, watching them, training with them. And, brother, they hit. You know, you got these boys crying now because you might potato them or hit them a little hard. They couldn't last in Global. So them old men came at you.
By that time, when you were in Global, you know, did you realize then you wanted to be a professional wrestler full time and, like, you know, go, you know, be all in? I know when you said you were training, it was just kind of a thing you were doing in shape. But when you actually started having matches, did you really learn to love it and want to do it all the time?
Yes, that's when I fell in love with it, when I hit Global, because I love contact anyway, contact sports. And with Global, I mean, like I said, with them old men, man, it was like playing football with no pads on. Yeah.
So how did it turn into you were a big guy. You had a lot of charisma. You had a lot of size. Seems like a natural fit that one day you would go to WWF. How did that come about? Who made the contact with you, and what was your reaction?
I got contacted. Michael Hayes is the one that connected us. Freebird Michael Hayes.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. He connected us and showed VG. He said he showed Vince tape one time. And Vince was like, give me his number. And Vince called me. He called me directly. I didn't get a call from my agent or anybody like that. I got a call from Vince.
Wow. What was that conversation like? Were you nervous?
Yeah. What was it, a blocked number?
Well, it was a short conversation because I didn't think it was him. I thought it was somebody playing a ha-ha. You know? It was like, you know, he called and it was like, this is Vince McMahon. I speak to Tony Norris. And I was like, who is this? This is Mr. McMahon. I was like, yeah, okay, right. I said, what do you want? And he started laughing when I said, what do you want? He started laughing. And he's like, I'd like to send you up, fly you up here and talk to you about a contract. I'm like, okay, man, yeah, whatever. And the phone conversation was that short. And then the next morning, there was a knock at the door, and it was UPS with a first-class ticket down to Stamford, Connecticut.
Wow. Ahmed, you would be very surprised We have heard that story from probably 30 guys, wrestlers, that said, yeah, I got a call, but I thought it was a rib, so I told him to screw off and I hung up. You know, we've heard it so many times.
So when you got there, you're flying first class, you know, the red carpet's rolled out for you and everything. When you got there, what was the conversation like? Did they tell you right away that they had big plans for you?
Yeah, Vince, you know, he did. He told, you know, he watched the tape and he was thoroughly impressed. And, you know, we went on and on and on. And it was like after that, you had no say in the matter, you know. Once you said yes, it was like, okay, I want to get you the wardrobe and I want to get you to, you know, the name so we can pick out a good name and blase, blase. And once you say yes and sign that paper, you had no more control.
Did they do, there's a, you know, stories about different ways that they kind of recruit people. Did they do the whole limo thing? Did you go to his house or his office? Like, were you wine and dined when you got there? How was that whole situation?
Yeah, I went to his office, sent a limo out. I went to his office and then at the hotel room, and it was champagne. And I mean, this room was almost bigger than my house. I was like, man, you know, it was the first floor. Went on penthouse suites. Just enough to get you. He did just enough to get you to bite.
Yeah.
And then once he got you to bite, you're all in, and you have to kind of go along with everything.
So you're through after that.
So were you happy with the name? Sorry, I was gonna say, were you happy with the name and everything that they threw out to you?
Well, yeah, I was kind of confused at first with the name, until I started, you know, digging into it and finding out what it means and this, that, and the other.
Yeah, it sounds like just on the surface, it's like, I just, you know, I work with people who work with Vince, who worked with Vince. It's like, okay, we need to make him even more ethnic. Let's name him Ahmed.
Yeah, it was Ahmed's a Muslim name, and I couldn't understand that.
So there's almost this subtle kind of reach out to a certain kind of audience, that kind of thing, you think?
Yeah, I think he was, because, you know, that's after that is when we start going to Kuwait and India. We start hitting them, you know, Eastern countries.
And
didn't really have a star at first that could, you know, draw. And when I went down there, man, it was golly. They treated me like I was one of the kings or something.
So when you started wrestling full time for WWF, what was the locker room scene like at the time? Like, was it compared to global? Were you walking into like a whole different world? Did you know anybody? Did they treat you well?
No, I didn't know a soul in the locker room. No, not one person. And you can tell there was some heat there because the push that I got right off the bat. And it was, you know, my first match was out there when I slammed Yoko. And Yoko was like, you know, he was, had some heat with me. He was kind of jealous. And so, I mean, I went in the back after Vince told me what he wanted. I went back and he made me tell Yoko instead of him telling him. So I went back and I told Yoko what was up. You know, I said, well, I'm going to come out here and after the match and give you, you know, just pick you up and slam you.
Wow.
And then Yoko said, I hope you can pick me up because I'm not going to jump you. I'm not going to jump for you.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, you got to be kidding me. Johnny, am I going to pick up this Volkswagen? But I was like, okay, cool. I mean, in the gym, I can, you know, been pressed close to 600 pounds. I can get him up. And then we got out there, man, and it was like unbelievable because he was so large until my hand and arm like disappeared in his ass when I went to scoop him up. And so it was like picking up 700 pounds of chew bubble gum. If you know what I mean, not making fun, but if you know what I mean,
I got you.
Like your hands and stuff just disappeared and made it even harder. But I was out there, and I was like, man, I can't embarrass myself in front of the nation. I got to get him up. So I got him up.
So he didn't jump at all?
No, he didn't give me a hand at all, brother.
And what was the scene like after? Did he say, like, man, you got me up? Like, was he impressed, or did you not even talk to him?
Yeah, I didn't even talk to him after that. And then later on down the road, we became buddies. You know, we started riding together and everything else. But he tested me again one time in the locker room. I had a match with Owen and Davey. And, you know, Owen and Davey likes to play ha-has.
Right.
In the ring, you know, they play jokes when you're in the ring. You got to be ready for anything when you wrestle them on the Davey. And it was me and Yoko against Owen and Davey, and he didn't like the fact that they was ha-ha, and, you know, I was kind of going along with them. So we got in the locker room, and he slammed one of the benches and was cussing us out. So I took my shirt off and got right in his face, no snow, and I said, man, look, you want to go back with it, man? If you want some of this, let's go. Let's get it done now. You know, basically. And he, there isn't saying it was nothing but respect.
When
he found out I wasn't one of the little punks.
He found out quick, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, so you're a guy, you're not, you know, super young at the time, you know, so that probably served you well. You're 30, you know, 30-ish.
Right.
And you know, you've been given this big push. You've come from a challenging background. You had so much success in college ball. You actually did a little thing with the Cowboys. How well do you think you handled it? Now that you're older, looking back, how well did you handle that initial push, the initial fame, the initial Ahmed Johnson experience?
I think I handled it good in the beginning. I could have handled it better at the end, toward the end. I could have handled it a lot better toward the end. But it was, you know, just one of them things, man, where you don't let a bunch of stuff get to your head. I had a bunch of stuff going on. Family member that was sick and everything else. And it all kind of like, it's kind of like when everything came down, it came down at once. You know, anything bad that could happen at that moment happened.
And, You're a Vince guy, you know. Vince likes you. He called you himself, and you know, you have people are jealous, of course, and people wrestling is weird that way, where you know they're fighting for their spots. And did you have anybody in your corner besides Vince? Because once Vince isn't there, you know, you're just in the locker room. Any veteran take you under their wing, or any agent kind of help you out? Any guiding light for you while you're there?
Well, only thing that really helped that I can say, Triple H helped me in the ring big time. Razor Ramon helped me. He would watch my matches, and when I got done, he would put me to the side. After most of my matches, he would put me to the side and tell me what, you know, he seen that he liked and what he didn't like. And so, you know, I had those two in my corner in the beginning, so that was cool with me, you know. Then Razor them left. But it, in the beginning, that's the two guys I would give credit to.
And what about winning the Intercontinental Championship from Goldust?
Oh, that was fun, Goldust. That was fun. That was fun. I give Goldust his props too, man. He, you know, he's just a hell of a performer. He's a hell of a performer. He gets you over. You can't get over with Goldust. You can't get over.
And with Goldust,
he's one of the best in the business.
Oh, go ahead.
He's one of the best in the business as far as getting you over, I'm telling you.
With Goldust,
yep.
you had this angle, which was kind of, looking back, it doesn't age well because it kind of, it looks a little homophobic, but where you were just mortified at being kissed by him, and then you kind of, you know, because he had to give you mouth to mouth. Was that all
right?
Was that good for you? Did you enjoy that? Not the kiss, but the experience of that angle and everything?
The angle was cool. I did. The angle was cool, but only thing it did at first is almost turned into something bad, but you remember that boy that was standing in front of the door that I ran through him?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because the reason that happened was we practiced this over and over, and Goldust was supposed to put his hand over my mouth, and he was supposed to kiss his hand, but he wanted to do a ha-ha because he knew it was live TV and I couldn't, you know, get up and move if he kissed me. So he kissed me for real, and I was like, oh, my God. And I was so fired up. And I get downstairs, and this little chump by the door, you know, it's standing there, and I just went through him and the door, man.
You destroyed him.
And Goldust was gone. He just gone. I mean, got in his car and gone.
And when you did win the Intercontinental Championship, just to go back to that, you were the first ever African-American Intercontinental Champion. Did that mean a lot to you?
Yes, it did. Yes, it meant a lot. But you know what, man? It was funny, like I did announce right after I won the belt. I didn't win it just for one, you know, particular race. I want it for everybody out there who thought they couldn't do something and, you know, be something. It was more so that in my heart than it was I'm doing it just for one race, you know. And, you know, a lot of people got upset when I said that, but, hey, that's how I feel. And if they don't like it, they know where to find me.
Well, I don't think they would. But for you, with that IC championship, of course, a lot of us fans, you know, think of it as the workers' title. Very important title. And especially at the time, wasn't passed around a lot. That must have signified to you a lot of confidence, but also kind of a bright future. Where at that point did you feel like your future was going?
Hello, this is Brent, owner of PleasurePronicsUSA.com. And with the holidays coming, we have a new special offer for the wide-ended listener. Visit StopUsingYourHand.com/booty and pick up one of our top-selling products. Regularly priced $160 for only $95. And that $95 includes free shipping. This realistic booty replica is made from soft, realistic cyber flesh and features two uniquely textured entry points for maximum pleasure. If a little booty's not going to do it for you, we still have the free stroker promotion as well. Visit StopUsingYourHand.com/promo and enter the code FISTBUMP. That's right, Robbie does the fist bump, and so can you with this free stroker. All you have to pay is $6.95 for shipping and handling. Take advantage of one of these promotions today or visit StopUsingYourHand.com and check out our other exciting products, including our flagship, the 3D Starlet Stroker. That's right. Have you ever wanted to be with a porn star? Now you can with a 3D Starlet Stroker. Have vibration. Have that voice of sexy Lauren Phillips or Sarah J or six other adult superstars send you over the top with the 3D Starlet Stroker. Come on, guys. Check your ego at the door. You know everybody does it. Why deprive yourself of satisfaction when Pleasure Products USA cares about your privacy? Your order will arrive in plain packaging, and your credit card statement will not reflect an adult product was purchased. So what are you waiting for? Visit StopUsingYourHand.com today. And remember, Pleasure Products USA, our business is your pleasure.
Kind of a bright future. Where at that point did you feel like your future was going?
I figured it was, because remember, at one point I was supposed to go against Sean for the world championship, but that kept getting pushed back farther and farther. You know, different people getting hurt and different things happening. But I believe, you know, if things would have went by the book, the way things were wanting to, I probably would have been the first world champion.
Well, it certainly seemed like it was headed that way. Why do you think that it got stalled?
Yeah, do you think it was something that behind your back maybe Sean was saying, or did you get along with Sean?
I do believe it was behind my back and stuff that not only Sean was saying, but some other races, you know, boys were saying. I really do.
Let's talk about that just for a second. You know, it's one thing where the clique, you know, of course, they're known for burying a lot of people like Shane Douglas and, you know, and Sean has owned up to that. What makes you so certain, you know, and just explain it to me like I'm stupid because I'm just some white guy in Virginia. What makes you so certain there was a racist component to it?
because with Sean, just kind of things I heard from some of the boys about, you know, what Sean was saying, you know, about handing over the belt to an, you know, an African American and this, that, and other. And then when I won the belt, I don't know if you've heard that, when I won the belt, somebody scratched "Congratulations, nigger" on my car.
Oh my God.
On my rental car.
Really?
Somebody's, yeah. On my rental car. And then you got people that were saying it was Sean, some said it was Steve. I don't know which one it was, but they was too cowardly to stand up to it.
Steve Austin?
Yeah.
Wow.
When this happens, what about the other wrestlers of color? Like, do they kind of come around you, or is it still their boys and it's all good, or is there some kind of, like, you know, like, that's...
Oh, man, they were pissed. No, they were pissed. Very pissed. They had the worst I've ever seen. The divide was when the Nation was going against the Hart Foundation, and the Click went there and did all that shit in locker room. Do you remember that?
I definitely remember that.
Okay. Well, that's the worst I've ever seen them. That didn't have anything to do with me. That was the Nation, you know, versus the Hart Foundation versus the Click. And I know the Hart Foundation didn't, you know, that they didn't do that. I know the Click did it. But it was, you know, they went too far with that one. And even then, Sean was like the little cat that ate the canary, you know. Ugh. This makes me sick, man.
Did you see...
So when you start...
Oh, I'm sorry, Robbie.
Matt. Yeah, you go.
Did you see any other examples of that kind of thing affecting other wrestlers, like, you know, Ron Simmons or D'Lo or anything like that? Or was it kind of really targeted towards you at the time? I know about the thing with the... that was on screen, but backstage, like, was that something talked about, you guys? Like, we're up against this, guys.
Well, yeah, it was talked about backstage. With Farouk and them and all, and they were just getting tired of it, man. You know, Farouk and Common, D'Lo, who cares if he's tired of it? But most guys, you know, back there were getting fed up. That right there, where they really got fed up with it after that scene with the Click. That was going too far. But, you know.
Well, throughout your run, you had some injuries throughout your WWE career, including some kidney problems that you had, which kept you out of SummerSlam. Was that something that came out of nowhere?
No, some of the injuries were stage injuries. Some of the injuries was done. I told me Vince wanted to build up the draw for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So some injuries, all the injuries wasn't injuries like people think they were. I think they went too far with it because there was just too many injuries.
But
I wasn't injured all the time.
This particular kidney kind of issue you had, they, you know, forced you to miss SummerSlam, and you had a championship match the following night on Raw that you were able, that you had to miss, and then they kind of had Farouk, you know, Ron Simmons on screen, explain it away with, you know, an attack, and there was a lot of different things going on. Do you think, particularly that first kidney issue, and the fact you were in line for a title shot, do you think that, like, is a tipping point that may have changed your career, like, right there?
I don't know. Me personally, because I don't see how. But you're probably right. I mean, you know, you guys sitting, you know, in the audience watching it, and probably can see a lot more than we can see going on. You're probably right. I never thought about it like that. You just said that. But you're probably correct.
And then after the injury, you know, you're still hot. Like, you're still one of these guys that's like top tier babyface kind of guys, if I can use the expression, Robbie. And you come back and you face the Nation. And that's pretty hot at the time. What did you think about the whole Nation thing? And what did you think about coming into feud with them?
I think it was good to get about. I think it went on too long for me.
How long did it end up going on?
Oh, my God. What? Over a year?
That's kind of long.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, it kept drawing, you know, wherever we went, especially overseas, it was drawing big time. But I just think it went on just a tad bit too long.
Did you enjoy working with Farouk?
Oh, yeah, I did. I enjoyed working with him. Because, you know, he had a lot more knowledge about, you know, what should go on and how the match should go than I did. Then he's been in the business forever.
Did you find it that the physical stuff in wrestling was way easier for you than the psychology?
Let me see. Pretty stuff was way easier than psychology. In a way, yes. Because I could do things other people couldn't do. I mean, here I am, 300-something pounds, and I can dive over the third rope. And, you know, all the stuff I could do, and most people couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And it was easy. It wasn't even hard for me to do. They could have put a fourth rope, but then I could have got over it. You know, that's what made it, you know, I think that's what made me such a standout was with my size and the agility I had was basically unheard of.
Did you still at that time, I mean, at that time you're teaming with guys like the Undertaker, you know, you teamed with the Hawk and Animal at WrestleMania 13 against the Nation. You know, you're really at the top of the card. Did you still feel at that time that you were kind of, you still had that shot to reach that dream of being that, you know, first African-American world champion?
I feel though it was building up. Everything he did was building up toward that. Everything he did was building toward that, but it's just, you know, some things are more important to me than that. Than the money and the fame and all that.
So what was important to you?
Well, like I said, at the time when I left, it was a lot of stuff going on. I had a family member, a sister that was really sick, that was, you know, cancer sick. So, I mean, it was like that and relationship and just everything was just, you know, falling apart.
Did wrestling offer
what
you
tried to do it?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say,
because we get questions.
It sounds like, you know, you had a lot going on. Did wrestling offer you those moments you were inside the ring? Did it offer you some kind of escape from it, where you could, you know, get away from all that, or was it just affecting you in the ring as well?
It did, but my, you know, temper was really bad. Because all the stuff that was going on, and I was, it wasn't fun anymore.
Did you not enjoy when you got turned heel and you joined the Nation?
I didn't like that. I didn't like that because, you know, the thing, the trick to that was, Vince never told me from day one whether I was a heel or babyface. What he said was, just go out there, we'll let the audience make that choice. They never made me a heel or babyface.
You just kind of did your thing and saw how the people reacted.
Right. And I was shocked. And that's why, you know, people talk about how, you know, racist some of the audiences, sure, there's going to be some racist people out there, but the overwhelming thing was they could have looked at me as a heel for being, you know, this black dude from the streets and they could have automatically put me in the heel category. But they didn't. They made me a babyface. Not Vince and WWF. The audience did. So that tells you something. You look in deep into that. That tells you something. And that's why I've always, treated my audience, that's why I always treated them with respect and treated them well. And I've never told anybody that wanted an autograph, I've never told them no. Never. Mm-hmm. Because that meant a lot to me. The fact that they took this black kid from the streets that was looked mean as hell and they turned him to their baby face. They could have turned me into the heel automatically, but they didn't do that.
So the turn to the nation kind of flew in the face of what you found a very welcoming and kind of validating thing where the audience...
Exactly.
An easy way out, right? Easy way out booking-wise?
Exactly.
It's real quick, it's just something curious to me is going back... to, of course, like every other industry, like every other sport, wrestling has a racial past. And in the past, they'd only have African-American wrestlers wrestle other African-American wrestlers or tag with them. And that tradition seemed to continue, for a long time. Did you feel like you were kind of just all placed together? Like, did you ever get that notion, like whether in feuds or tag teams or that kind of thing?
Well, later on when... It went so long with the nation that crossed my mind, but I never got to do that tag with. I never tagged with any African American people. I don't think.
Well, that's true. I was just saying, they put you in the nation, and they had you feuding with Ron Simmons, and they had you. It seems like maybe that was where they just were comfortable going a lot of times.
It seemed like, to me, Vince was looking for, when he put me with the nation, they were trying to find a powerful heel. And I had everything going for me as far as, the heel goes. I mean, without even trying, I had, the look, the talk if I wanted to or whatever. But it didn't. Go like that. That's why when we did that first interview, I went to, Vince and why is it, that he never had a black champion? And I don't know if you remember that interview.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I asked him all those questions.
What do you think the reason was that it was so short-lived of you being in the nation?
Because he knew that when I went with the nation, it was like the fans really didn't buy it. They wanted the Ahmed Johnson. Somebody that can go against, powerful heels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just at the time, there was really no super heels.
And what was your early memories back then? Because obviously soon then it got switched over and The Rock became a part of it. What are your early memories of The Rock? How was he for when he was first coming in?
Oh, he was cool when he first came in. When he first came in, he was real cool with a Chia Pet haircut.
That great outfit.
Yeah. He was real cool. But then as things went along... His shit didn't stink.
Did his attitude change?
Oh my God, did it change? Big time.
And this was what, when they turned him heel?
Yeah, when he started, getting all the fame and glory. When he turned heel, when he was babyface, they booed him and he was kind of like a D-Lo. D-Lo, no matter what side he takes, the fans aren't going to really take to him. I mean, they tried everything with D-Lo, and the fans wouldn't go. They just never brought into him.
So
with The Rock, he, when he turned heel, and
And then I give him his props. He was a hell of a heel. He was good at what he did. But then, you know, his attitude started changing with it, and that's what really threw me off.
Now, you've talked a little bit about, you know, the perception of you having injury issues, and you've talked a little bit about how a lot of that was on-screen stuff and some of that was played up. What about this kind of rap you get for being dangerous in the ring? You know, we've heard this. You've probably heard it. What is your reaction to that? You know, have you heard that? And what do you feel about that?
You know, that's, to me, most of that was just jealous people at the time, because I was never dangerous in the ring. Maybe the high-flying stuff, you know, me being so big and them having to catch me, a lot of them consider that dangerous. But, you know, I landed as light as I could. But the measurement to that is, ask yourself this question. Why in WCW not one person ever complained about me being rough or hitting too hard or being a shooter? Not one person in WCW ever complained. And that's including Hogan. Not one person ever complained.
But so you think, everybody just made up lies? Well, or do you think they were lies? You think people were saying it to get you in trouble?
Yeah, to kind of slow down the push I was getting. Confident push I can get, because I can't remember once going down on my mind with my mindset to hurt somebody or hit somebody hard. Except for Vader. Me and Vader had agreed that we were going to go out there and put on the show. And we went out there, brother, and we laid some leather on each other. Yeah. Yeah. But outside of that message, Vader, I was, you know, as light as I could be with the guys. And WCW, never, not one complaint.
So in
about me being rough.
So towards the end of WWE, your attitude, I mean, backstage, were you really just at the point where you just kind of didn't give a shit anymore?
No, I would never say I didn't give a shit. It just, like I said, that toward the end, it was just so much on my mind, man. I had so much on my plate. You know, most guys would have, you know, as soon as it happened, walked away. But I stayed, tried to hang in there as much as I could.
Who were your friends? Who did you ride with? Who were your running buddies towards, you know, that end part of...
Well, mainly Taker, Crush, Yoko, Farouk, Kama, who else? Vader. Who else? I forgot some of the guys, man.
Well, with those guys, it sounds like you had to know how to play dominoes, right?
Oh, my God. You had to learn how to play everything, especially when you was Farouk and Kama and Ron and Rikishi. That was who I rode with most of them. I'd say Rikishi and Yoko. It was a good time with them.
So what was the last straw for you to, you know, finally leave completely? Was it a phone call? Was it something done in person? Who did you talk to?
Oh, my last, I went straight to Vince in the office.
So,
and just said, it's time to go.
Your last,
the only thing I regret about that, I regret, because like you said, you grew up like I grew up. And if you grew up, you know, being beat every day, you know, and taking these whippings and these beatings from your dad, if you grew up like that, then you know you don't, you know, complain to people when you have trouble. You think you can handle it yourself. And that's the only thing I regret is I didn't go to Vince and tell him what was going on. He never knew what was going on as far as all the trouble I was having, you know, in my life at that time. I never told him or anybody else. Matter of fact, it's probably like my third time talking about it.
So you're...
But I wish now I would have told him. I wish now I would have told him, you know, maybe he would have understood and gave me some time off and, you know, let me help me work through it. But I didn't, because I wasn't the type of person that complained to people. I handled my own business.
So your last match in WWF was with the DOA, you know, and Ken Shamrock against the Nation. But you said there was a conversation that took place, but you did not tell Vince what was going on, you know, because maybe sometimes we get those situations, we just assume people should know, and sometimes we don't want to tell people. Who was it that you had the conversation with? What led to Ahmed Johnson leaving the WWF and cutting off this super, you know, the potential for this awesome career that kind of, you know, shockingly was coming to an end? What was that conversation?
Well, I didn't tell anybody. Nobody. I kept it in my head and my heart. And I thought I could work through it. I thought I could, you know, I've handled so much in my life. I figured I could handle that too without involving people. You know, you don't like to involve people in your business when you grow up like that. And you can handle, it's like you can handle everything and anything. So I didn't tell anybody. I just said, I'll handle it.
Did you just leave?
And then the more I tried to handle it, the more it seemed like it was crashing in on me.
Did you leave thinking that you might come back one day?
I hope, honestly, yeah. I was hoping I would. I was hoping I would.
So did you just leave? Did you just let them know I'm leaving, or did you know?
Yeah, I just told them the truth. I told them I was having, you know, some sort of situation I had to handle, and you know, I couldn't wrestle and handle the situation. I didn't tell them the situation was, I just told them I couldn't handle it. Because then I feel though if I would have tried to stay there and wrestle, the thing that would have happened was I would have been a shooter. You know, I would have been, you know, hitting people hard. And the first person that got out of line, I know me, and, you know, if my temper goes off, I don't know what I'll do. So I said it's probably best for me to go ahead and just take a walk before I do hurt somebody.
And he was okay with it, though? Like, was he originally pissed that you were just walking out, or did he completely understand and he was caring?
Oh, no, he was pissed. He still is, I believe. I believe he still is pissed from out here. No, he was super pissed.
So since then, that day when you... Well, when you left that day, have you ever tried to reach back out or reconnect with WWE in any way?
Honestly, no.
Not one ever, not one phone in. Call or anything?
I've never called, not one time. I've never called, not one time, because I felt though I did something, you know, wrong. I burnt my bridge right there, and I wasn't trying to get back in, you know, in his good grace.
Well, you say
so
that.
I just have a problem, too, because Vince is the type of person that make you grovel. You know what I'm saying? If you do something wrong against him, he's going to make you grovel to get back in. And I have never been in a groveling mood.
So, it's, you said that, you know, you thought it best to walk away because you might snap on somebody. When you think about who would be the object of that anger in WWE, was there a group of people or somebody that if you just saw them again, you might not be able to control yourself, or was it stuff outside WWE?
Well, it was the clique for sure. And that's enough. But Lord knows they have enough members in it. But, you know, Sean and them, I knew the shit that happened before, and it was still eating at me, you know, especially that congratulations to get people in the car. That still eats me today.
if you could go back and do anything differently about the way you left, would you? Do you have regrets?
Yeah, I would tell him what's going on. Yes, yes, I do. But, you know, if you do anything different, I would go ahead and tell him what's going on and not try to hold it in and hang it myself.
What about being, I mean, you know, you made history, the first ever African-American Intercontinental Champion. You know, do you ever think that could get a call for the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. I'm not holding my breath.
Looking back at it, did you just perceive that whole locker room, that whole situation, is these racist assholes, I'm getting the hell out of here? Is that basically it? Is that how you felt?
No, not really, because some of the guys are real good guys. No, not everybody. I mean, the clique for sure. But no, it wasn't everybody. Like Psycho said, he was cool as hell, man. There was a few people out there that was cool. That, you know, Owen and Davey, loved them to death. They were like, you know, they made coming to work fun because you knew they were going to do something crazy. And at first, when I first got there and they start doing ha-ha to me, I started to wonder, you know, whether because they didn't like anything or what. But then Brett told me that Owen and Davey don't play ha-ha on people that they don't like. If they don't like you, they don't do ha-ha on you. Or do, you know, crazy stunts and stuff because they don't, you know, care too much for you. They'll rather jump on your ass than play with you.
So how long after debut? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I don't mean to keep cutting you off, I apologize, but how long after leaving WWF did you end up in WCW? What was the gap between the two?
It was a gap, I would say.
About a year?
What was it? About a year or less.
And then how did that come about?
Well, they called me once, and I turned and I said no because I was still going through my situation. And then Stevie called me. And when Stevie called me and told me he needed me down there with him, I was like, well, okay, him and Vince Russo, I heard from both of them. And I was like, well, okay, I'll come on down. I wasn't ready for it. I mean, I wasn't in shape. I wasn't. I'm not going to tell them that I'm not in shape. I'm not ready for this. You know, don't worry about it. You know, we got you. You're not going to be doing that much. And, you know, we just need you down here and this, that, and the other. So I brought into him down there, and then he tried to work me to death.
And you formed, you know, kind of got in between storyline wise, Booker T and Stevie Ray. You know, in a very WCW thing, you won the right to the letter T. you know, it's probably Vince Russo. And then, and by the way, Vince Russo had a lot of good things to say about you. I talked to him about you today. He just had a lot of great things to say about you.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was your experience like working with Vince?
Oh, I love working. I think this was the reason why we had such a good attitude there. Was because of Vince Russo. I mean, I just loved his matches, man. And when they let him go, I was like, "You gotta be shitting me."
Do you attribute a lot of success in WWE at that time to Vince Russo?
I do.
And in WCW, you did the Harlem Heat 2000. You know, you're a little bit involved when they're, you know, doing all these stop and start things. What was the scene like in the locker room at WCW compared to WWE?
Oh, and the thing for WCW was the boys didn't cry.
The bad thing was the boys ran the locker room. It was like the inmates ran the asylum.
Yeah, yeah. Just madness going on, changing every week, right?
Mm-hmm. That's the thing that WCW was. The inmates ran the asylum, and that's just the way it was.
Now, being there with some, you know, like Nash and Hall, who were Click members that were associated with, like, Sean from back where you just were, did you have any issues with them at all, or did you get along with them?
No. I didn't have any issues with them. Because I told you, Hall was the one that helped me out when I first got to WWF. He was the one that was showing me, you know, he would watch my matches and tell me what was good and what was not good. And I you know, I always remember that. That's why when I had my signature move, when I threw both my hands out to the side, that was what he used to do. Huh. And I was just paying respect to him. I heard he got upset about it, but I meant it as respect, not as me copying you, you know?
Yeah.
When with Scott Hall, you know, he was a member of the Click, so when all that shit was going on with the Click and WWF, was he kind of tagging along with it, or was he still kind of supportive and helping you out and being a friend?
He was still, you know, supportive and helping me out. When, you know, even when they was getting their little Click and started, and they were doing that, they wasn't quite the Click then. They were getting it started, though. Then I know him and Nash are out of there.
And then what was your exit like from WCW? How did that come about?
That's when it was, this is when they shut the doors anyway in WCW. And I, like I told you, I wasn't feeling it. You know, I wasn't in shape. I wasn't me. I wasn't Ahmed Johnson. I just wasn't feeling it.
And then after that, did you think you were done with wrestling forever? Did you wrestle after that? What was what happened after WCW closed?
I did a few little house shows. You know, I wrestle better when I'm wrestling solo. I'm not a great tag team wrestler, but I did some shows here and there.
And then just slowly kind of, was it that maybe you just kind of like lost your love or interest for it while you didn't want to do more?
Yeah, you can say that.
When you look at the career of Ahmed Johnson, it's funny, you know, you said you didn't feel like Ahmed Johnson anymore, this name that was given to you, now you felt attachment to. Pull something out of that great career you had for us. What was the highlight? What do you look back at in WWF, even WCW, something that makes you smile and makes you think, you know, wow, I'm really glad I did that?
Let me see. I would say what made me smile was Slim and Yoko, because he didn't think I could do it.
You got him.
And that the fans really knew how much I had to do, they would have been even higher on their feet. Because when I did that, what makes you feel good in wrestling, man, is when you get a good pop. Nobody can deny a good pop from an audience. And the Intercontinental belt was cool, too. That was a cool moment.
Well,
like I said, I never looked at it as... Never looked at it as just being the first black guy. I looked at it as being the first underprivileged guy. You know, a guy who grew up rough. But that same thing I did with football and everything else, it just made me so proud, because, I mean, the odds were against me growing up.
When you look back...
You know, I kept my nose clean.
We don't know Tony
Go ahead,
Norris.
I'm sorry.
We don't know Tony Norris outside of Ahmed Johnson, you know, but someone who came from, you know, a background you had, you know, and had a dad who treated you and your mother the way that he did. Looking back on it, do you feel like you overcame that upbringing? Is that something you have pride in?
Yes. Big time. And if you knew, if you, I wish I had a crystal ball that you can look into and see some of the stuff that I went through with this man, my dad. If I had a crystal ball, you can look through that. I can show you this one episode and you would freak out. You would freak out and you would say, man, how in the hell did you overcome that? I mean, it's bad. It was bad.
How did you overcome it?
I guess help with the Lord, man. I guess the Lord helped me overcome it because I don't know outside of you know, believing in the Lord. I don't know. I guess I'll always believe if I don't straighten up, I'm going to get in trouble with God when I die. So well, I kind of straighten up from there. But I think my faith helped me overcome it.
Well, Ahmed Johnson, Tony Norris, you've been a pleasure to have. You've told us, you've told it to us all. We can't thank you enough. Robbie, what a great guest we've had today in Ahmed Johnson.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate you doing this.
Hey, man, thanks. You guys are the hell of interviewers. I've never been asked questions like you guys ask them.
Robbie, that was not what I expected at all. What did you think? I'm still thinking about it. I think that's one of our best interviews, like, for real.
Do you know that, I don't know if you know this or not, but after his wrestling career, do you know that Ahmed Johnson got a criminology degree?
Well,
I found that out from my research of him.
You know, and why it ended is really, people don't know, it's really based on Robbie's extensive research. You should see.
Yeah.
He's sitting at like one of those drafting tables with one of those visors. He's got drafts and he's got all that stuff. But for real, Ahmed's story about overcoming, you know, a challenging childhood is so much bigger than our view of it from the outside as fans going, oh, this guy was good and then he disappeared and he was injury prone and he hurt people. Like, we don't know what the hell's going on in this guy's life, and it sounds like he's at a pretty good place, dude. What did you think of the interview?
Yeah, I mean, you could tell that he holds in a little bit, and there definitely is some regret with how he left WWE. I mean, if you really think about it, if he would have went to Vince and just told him what was really going on, if that's what was really going on, and, you know, they would have gave him a leave of absence, and he would have been able to come back at a later time. I mean, who knows where he would be right now?
Did you just trip over a stool? It sounded like you tripped over a stool.
No, a picture fell in my office.
Just from the presence of Robert Strauss. You're exactly right, you know, and if you've ever seen Vince, he's very intimidating. Like, and I'm sure when you know him, he's still intimidating. You know, I know people who know him who are, you know, they might not feel comfortable going to him, but I think he would have been receptive to that. And we heard some stories we never heard before. And guys, make sure to tweet us, tweet about the show. But I want to talk about next week's show. Robbie, I haven't told you who the guest is, have I?
No. Who do you got for us? Who's kicking off the new year for us, Matt?
Well, the new year is going to be a new show because there's a person I know who's going to be on NBC, and his name is Robert Strauss. And Robert Strauss, I want to know why it ended for Robbie E. And I'm going to interview next week to start our year off with why it ended with my interview of Robbie E. on why it ended. Are you game for that? Are you down for that?
So wait, you basically get to say I get to talk about myself for an hour? Yeah, I'm in.
This might be a terrible idea. You guys, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/why it ended. And if you did, you already heard the show. My God, what's going on over there?
The picture went down again.
Just leave it. Hey, if you are a patron, then you got this show early. You got this interview early. And also tons of bonus content, and you get to support the two nicest guys in all of podcasting. Check us out on YouTube, whereandit.com, Robbie E. at Robert Strauss, me at Matt Coon Music. Anything else I forget there, Robbie? Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that stuff?
Yep. Thank you, guys. We appreciate the support. And we will see you next week to kick off 2019 strong with why it ended.
On. God damn it, you did it. Happy New Year.
I already did it. Bye.